This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Until very recently, newspapers were how most serious people got their news. They also acted as a kind of ground zero for much of what came out of radio and television news departments. The papers were news behemoths with enormous staffs dedicated to producing scads of newsprint every day. That is why, when the paper boy was able to hit your porch with the paper, it landed with a great thump. Today, unless it is placed carefully under the welcome mat, it might fly away. That's because we are living through a troubling change in the news business, where stop the presses used to mean stopping them for just long enough to add major breaking news to the latest edition. Now it means stop them forever. 120 newspapers have closed up shop in the past dozen years, and the outlook has only worsened since the Great Recession. Most newspapers have digital websites and apps, but readers aren't gravitating to them in enough numbers to make up for the loss of revenue on the print side. It's troubling not just for the newspaper business, but it should be troubling to us all, because we live in a country whose system of government depends on a properly informed electorate, informed by facts gathered and prescribed by gathered through standards prescribed by long-acknowledged journalistic principles. A group at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, has been hashing this out, focusing on how innovation in the business might lead to sustainability in local media. Penny Muse Abernathy is one of the people involved. She is night chair in journalism and digital media economics at UNC School of Media and Journalism, and she joins us from studios at WUNC in Chapel Hill. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And with us in our studio here in Charlotte is Sherry Chisenhall. She is the managing editor of the Charlotte Observer. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning, Mike.
Thanks for being here. When newspapers were king of the hill, they were really the only game in town. And it wasn't until this day in 1963, November 22nd, 1963, that television really came out of its infancy and began to make a name for itself as a news disseminating source. So although we have declining readership in newspapers, we have this 24/7 news media electronically. So why should we be concerned about the decline of newspapers? I'll start with Penny.
Well, I think what we need to do is look at it from two angles. First, historically, the newspaper is sort of a unique institution to the U.S. It was protected. It got First Amendment protections from the founders because they saw it at that point as mass media and the ability to inform citizenry being very important. It's also been quite unique, too, in that it's both a business and is also an institution with a civic mission. If you look, historically, newspapers have been community builders. So if you think back to the late 19th century and the westward movement, one of the first things the founders of a community would do is try to set up a newspaper because that got out the information that gave a sense of identity to the community they were trying to establish. Scholars have spent a good deal of time in the 1900s, kind of analyzing what makes newspapers different, what makes them unique, and especially in small and mid-sized markets, newspapers have been community builders in three ways. First and foremost, they've had the ability to set the agenda for debate of public policy issues. So what that means is they identify the important issues, they then cover them, where they place them on the front page mattered, and then the editorials that they did mattered. They also contributed to economic growth by, of course, the most obvious way being putting advertisers together with consumers. And then finally, they gave a sense of geographic identity to people in a certain area. One of my favorite quotes for newspapers I came across several years ago said that a good newspaper shows you how you're related to people in your area you may not realize you're related to. And so whether it's political, whether it's economic, whether it's social, we're related and identified with the region where we live, where we came from, and a whole range of things. So that's why it's important they should survive.
You know, newspapers are really the only entity that en masse every day editorialize. And we live in a world of increasing democratization. And I've talked to friends of mine who are, including your own film and theater critic, Larry Topman, about the demise of critics and why critics don't seem to be important anymore. And they were all over every newspaper. They had critics in every line of work, fashion, theater, film, television. And now people only seem to care about what they think. They only seem to care about what people on Twitter in the Twitterverse think. And what they think is equally valuable to somebody who is trained. What they think is equally valuable to what editors of newspapers who delve into facts every day at much deeper depths than most readers do. What they say as readers is just as important as what you say. Is that part of the problem here? You can't be a leader in this world anymore.
Well, the first thing I want to back up and say is I want to challenge the statements that readers are not flocking in enough numbers to digital and that there's declining readership in digital. There was an article that was pretty widely passed around, and I think it was published first on Medium, talking about why people use the term the media. And there's not the media. The media can mean everything from a 2,000 circulation weekly to the New York Times to ABC News.
To a sitcom.
Right. Mm-hmm. Social media is the media. People are the media who can post news themselves. And so when you try to paint with a broad brush, it becomes a very difficult and I would raise a caution about that because I look at for The Observer in the paper that I came here from in Wichita, readership's never been bigger. Right now, the reach of digital has grown in double digits every year, and so you're looking at numbers that are far bigger than they were when we only have a print footprint. So they're, you know, if you
well, then the proper thing to say is you're not making as much money as you used to make, and that is the problem. You can't sustain a big operation like a newspaper unless you bring in the revenue to do it. Why aren't you making enough money? Why, with all these digital, the hunger for news, you're right, seems to be greater than ever. Mm. The sources to get that news also seem to be greater than ever, but it would seem to me that newspapers, big papers, would have a leg up on everybody else because you've been doing it for so long.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Penny's take on this is, but yes, I think part of the issue is advertisers aren't quite sure yet where to go to get in front of you. I mean, people have a huge skill at avoiding advertising, whether you DVR a series so that you can go past the commercials, you run ad blockers, you switch the station when an ad comes on your radio. But advertisers, I think, haven't figured out digital yet. And
what's different about it? When I read the paper in the morning, and I do, and I'm a subscriber.
Thank you.
When I read the paper, if I don't care about the center double truck rooms to go ad, it never even reaches my eyeballs. I just turn the page. So why is that any different from what happens on the digital platform?
Well, in digital, there are think of all the places you can go with your ads. But that's true of any medium. I mean, you can go into a restroom now and see ads on the back of the stall wall, which is not where I would advertise my business. But you know, restrooms have
They have eyeballs.
It's advertisers trying to figure out everywhere to go. Do I go to Facebook? Do I go to Google Ads? The click-through rates are small. Of trying to scatter dollars that were once very funneled toward print and TV, and those were your real true options. In the digital world, you can go in 100 or 1,000 places, and I think advertisers are still figuring out which work best and where to go. And while our digital revenue is absolutely growing at double digit rates, yes, it still doesn't stack up to the dollars that came that were taken for granted for decades in print.
Is online? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Penny, go ahead.
Mike, let me just back up and just give a little bit of perspective for what Shirley was saying. One of the problems has been the historic business model for newspapers. So at least for more than a century, we've basically shifted the burden of paying for news away from readers over to the advertisers. Mm-hmm. So most newspapers up until the 2000 relied on at least 80% to 90% of their revenue from advertisers. So people who thought they were paying for the news when the paper boy slung it against the paper at their front door or into the bush were not really paying for the news. They were basically paying for the distribution cost of distributing that news. So what happened since advertisers follow where people spend most of their time. So you could even begin to see by the late 1900s that people were shifting dramatically over to digital. So advertisers follow where people are because that's where they want to reach it. And as Sherry pointed out, advertisers are trying to constantly adjust their mix so they reach the advertiser in the right place, whether it's in the newspaper or the shopping mall or some other place.
So if the exorbitant price that I pay for your subscription and that of the New York Times is not covering the cost of the paper, it's covering the cost of distribution. Why haven't your costs fallen substantially, given the fact that the paper has shrunk? But online, you don't have to print it. You don't have to buy newsprint. You don't have to have a truck. You don't have to have a paper boy. Why isn't it much, much, much cheaper? Why can't you survive on much, much, much less money?
Because you still have to service the people like you who read a print edition of the newspaper.
So you'd like me to stop taking the paper? Is that what you'd
like?
No,
we would not. We would not like you to do that. But it is – newspapers are in a transition right now. I mean, I've basically transitioned over where I read everything on the newspaper on an iPad. I like it. It's a much better experience. But I'm not sure the iPad is the ultimate transition, despite what Steve Jobs may have thought when he debuted it. You've got to service both your very loyal customers that still value a print edition, and those printing presses are a tremendously expensive operation, as is the distribution.
Sherry.
Penny's absolutely right. You know, there was a time when I would say maybe even as recently as a decade ago that there would be about an 80-20 split in the cost of the paper coming to your doorstep. About 80 of that was carried by the advertiser. The enormous shrinkage of print advertising and how precipitously it's fallen has still – you still don't pay the true cost of what it takes to get that newspaper. And as those rates goes up, basically, you know, the companies, newspaper companies have said, as advertisers are paying less than that 80% share, it has to shift in some way. I mean, I've had this argument. My mother subscribes to a McClatchy paper. We're owned by McClatchy in Illinois. And she said, well, I got this huge rate increase. And she said it's gone up to something like $150 a year or something. I said
– a year?
Yeah. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about you get that paper because you want local news. How much of a single reporter's salary, how far does your $150 go to pay one single reporter, not to mention the people who print the paper, the people who sell advertising, the finance department that invoices, the carriers who deliver? Those costs are huge of running a printing press, and that cost is still not shifted completely. I saw a reader yesterday posted a comment about, you're just squeezing us readers. Well, readers still believe they're paying for their paper, and they're not. They're still not paying the cost of their paper.
Is online readership tracked like the number of paying subscribers to a paper, the physical paper, is tracked?
Mm-hmm.
How?
We have multiple measures of metrics that we use.
So how would you compare the number of people who read your paper online versus the number of people who either subscribe to it or buy it at a newsstand, if you can still buy it at a newsstand?
Well, years ago, in almost all of our company's papers, daily digital readership surpassed daily print readership.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what does the advertising revenue compare? How does it compare to the physical paper?
Meaning the rate that you get?
If I read you online, if I go to the website and I read the Charlotte Observer there, and there are ads on the website, how does the revenue you get from those ads compare to what you get in the printed paper?
Well, it's certainly less. But I would say this is those aren't the only two sources of revenue anymore. And Penny will know this. I mean, one of the things that newspapers are doing, including The Observer, is there multiple revenue streams. E-newsletters are a huge new thing for us.
And when I read it on my pad, I'm seeing the physical paper, so I'm seeing the ads in the paper. Do you track that, too, as having read – somebody has read your paper using your app?
Absolutely.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll talk more about this and what it's meaning to particularly smaller communities around the country when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Talk It Out NC, which provides research, results, and information on the different ways that alcohol can affect adolescent and adult brains. Talk It Out NC. SmallBusinessSouthend.org. And Historic South End celebrating this holiday season during Small Business Saturday, November 26th. Over 200 shops offering unique gifts for all on that holiday shopping list. Details at HistoricSouthend.com. Well, after the rough and tumble of the election, we all need some refinement. Just in the nick of time, along comes A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. The 2014 Tony Award-winning Best Musical opens tonight and is just silly. Perfect post-election holiday fare, and we meet some of the cast, including one who dies repeatedly in the course of the evening. And then Chef Peter Reinhardt is here to talk berries, cran, and otherwise. That's tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, some say President-elect Trump's rejection of the TPP and threats to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord would hand global leadership over to China. How China's global role could expand during the Trump presidency.
That conversation on the Diane Rehm Show following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about newspapers, the health of the industry, and what it means to not only readers, but people, citizens around the country. With Penny Abernathy, who is the Knight Chair in Journalism and Digital Media Economics at the UNC School of Media and Journalism. She joins us from Chapel Hill, and Sherry Chisenhall is in our studio in Charlotte. She's managing editor of the Charlotte Observer. While we were talking about subscriptions and costs of newspaper production, we got a comment from John on Facebook who says papers are shrinking and longtime subscribers were just informed of another price increase. That's it for me. And I've been subscribing for decades. You can't keep squeezing the subscribers forever. At some point, this has to come to either an end or a new way of operating. Now, we were talking about just this problem as he was probably writing that. So what do you say to somebody like that? This is it for him. He's done. He can't afford anymore. So what do you say? How do you work with that?
So the first thing is, as I talked about how that shift is going back to readers, I think that'll continue until advertising and audience revenue is balanced out. Readers.
But does that run the risk of taking you into the ground forever?
I wouldn't say into the ground, but certainly continue shrinking the readership also. And part of the
But if you shrink the readership and you shrink the paper, then isn't that going to further shrink the readership? Because what are they paying for?
It may shrink the print readership, but also print readers have digital subscriptions. Mm. And there is a bigger shift, I think, to digital readership than what some of the studies I've read recently and some of the reports have kind of indicated. Like, I think it was like readers aren't moving to digital. Well, they are moving to digital. I think ultimately, I mean, if I were going to put my $5 down on it, you know, I look back around 2008 and people said print newspapers were going to be gone in a year.
Yeah.
Okay, that didn't happen. They said it's in another year and that didn't happen. Many digital startups, though, failed in that time because it is hard to draw a mass audience. So with print, I think if I were going to place a bet, it would be that we may end up at a place where we have a sort of a super Sunday paper. And we may not have daily papers in the country, that I do think print is moving on a timeline to go away, but it's not now.
But there will be a daily edition, but it would be online.
Right.
And in fact, online, it's not a daily edition. It's a continuously updated edition. That's much harder, it would seem to me, to do and much more expensive to do in the long run, isn't it?
It is, certainly. But that's, it's a shift that many newsrooms have started making, have already made. And that is where there will be daily news. It just may not be on a dead tree.
Is the danger here, and I'd like to hear from both of you about this, is the danger, because we did a weekly news roundup show from The Observer, and after it was over, we took a tour of your new facility, which is beautiful and state-of-the-art, et cetera, and there's this wall of television monitors in your newsroom, and that those television monitors not only display CNN and all the usual suspects, it's also displaying what stories on your digital platform are being read right now? You can see what's trending. You can see what's hot. You can see what people are interested in. Can't do that with a print edition. You can only see that maybe the front page sold more newspapers at the newsstand. That's all you can tell. But as you find out more about what interests people, it's the danger that you will begin to cater to that at the expense of other things, like doing the skullduggerous work of investigative reporting that may or may not pay off?
Well, this is something that people in newsroom have wrung their hands about since the birth of the internet to newsroom, since digital news started. And I think what we find that I think has really sort of helped people get over that is yes and. Important big news, big series that we do, coverage of political races, the situation with the governor's election right now, that is highly read and moves to the top of the list. When we didn't have that real-time metrics that people could see, there was this fear of, oh, we're going to write all these stories about somebody's dog or something like this, and that's all we're going to do. And that hasn't come to pass. Mm-hmm. Do we have breaking news reporters who write things, very short, quick stories? We do, and it drives a lot of audience, but we still do bigger things that people expect from The Observer, and those are very well read.
Penny Abernathy is with us from the UNC School of Media and Journalism, and you've worked on the study, Penny, of the impact
right.
of the change in media, and particularly with regard to newspapers. And you point out that it is this country's community newspapers that provide as much as 85% of the news that feeds democracy. Those are your words at the state
right.
and local levels. Explain that.
Well, look at where news has historically come. And as you opened up the program by talking about that for broadcasts, one of your first checks of every morning of the last day's history has been what happened in the newspaper. So you can think about newspapers in various ways. You can think about the national newspapers like the New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal. You can think about the metros like the Charlotte Observer and the regional papers and like the News and Observer. And then you can think about every other newspaper in a small and mid-sized market. So each of those three different tiers provides a very different sort of news and a very different sort of perspective, and we turn to them for different things. So as Sherry just pointed out, if you're interested in what the outcome of the governor's race is right now, you're going to look to either the Raleigh paper or the Charlotte paper to give you the most comprehensive view of what that is. But if you're very concerned about what's going on in your with your county commissioner, with your in your county, in your town, with your town council, the only place you really have to look for the kind of in-depth and contextual coverage is going to be your newspaper.
If people outside of cities Charlotte or larger, in cities Charlotte or larger, that's really less of a problem. But if you're in a city much smaller than Charlotte, it could be that your community paper is the only source of any kind of local news, because TV news may not penetrate your market, and your stories in your local market may not be big enough for TV. And most radio stations no longer have news departments. Even
right.
public radio stations
mm-hmm.
in smaller markets either have a tiny little news department or none at all, because they can't afford to field one. We can, thanks to our listeners and their generosity, we can do that. So it's really important in these smaller markets. Talk about the role that community newspapers have historically played in those markets and what it means when they go away.
Well, let me give you a really good example of two small papers that we've worked with. One is the Whiteville News Reporter in Columbus County down near Wilmington. The other is the Washington Daily News, which we in North Carolina, of course, call Little Washington, North Carolina, over on Pamlico Sound. Both of those papers defy the notion that you have to be a New York Times to do important stories that really affect the quality of life of people in your community. The Whiteville News Reporter won the Pulitzer Public Service Gold Medal Award back in 1953 for spending 2 years taking on the Ku Klux Klan and writing stories that expose their infiltration of the Ku Klux Klan into the police and fire departments in Columbus County. As a result, they stopped the spread of the Ku Klux Klan from across the border into that region. And you stop and think what they had to endure to do that. Those are the kind of courageous things that when newspapers made money, much more money than they're making today, you knew you were going to take a hit financially, as you did. And that's one of the real problems with the economic situation these small papers are in right now.
Some of these community papers, I grew up in the D.C. area, and we used to have a daily
yeah. –
we had the Washington Post and the Washington Star and the Washington Daily News, and then we had the Alexandria
right.
Gazette. And I remember when I was a kid, the Alexandria Gazette became a weekly all of a sudden. It wasn't the daily, it was a weekly.
Yeah.
So this has been going on for a very long time. But now – As a lot of these local small papers become weeklies, how is that impacting things? Because don't they have a digital platform? Does it matter that they only print once a week?
Well, I think that it gets back to the notion of it doesn't. And I think, as Sherry said, even with some of the very large regional and metro papers, we may end up with a one once a week weekly paper. I've spoken to more than 40 press associations across the country over the last 2 or 3 years, and one thing that strikes me is that you have digital entities that start out purely on the digital space, and over a period of 3 to 5 years, as they gain an economic foothold, they begin to look around and say, gee, you know, we also need a print edition. And that is the important part to think about. We consume news across multiple mediums. The latest statistics from the American Press Institute shows that the average person uses 4 to 5 devices every day to consume news. And we need to think about what type of news we consume on each of those devices.
And where it comes from. I want to talk about that just very briefly, because this is really not what this conversation is about. But people do get their news from so many sources, and there is this palpable distrust of the media, which is driven in part by candidates for office who don't like what the media is saying about them, so they blame the media. And that's on both sides of the aisle, not just one. What's the advantage? Why should we trust a digital source that is run by the Charlotte Observer or the New York Times or a small weekly paper in a small town any more than we should trust Breitbart News? Why should we trust you?
Can I start with a broad answer to that and then let Sherry talk very specifically about the Charlotte Observer from all of that? First off, one of the things that has bothered me since I started teaching at UNC, before that I had worked at the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Charlotte Observer, a whole range of really wonderful papers that kind of set a standard for how they went about collecting news. One of the things that began bothering me as early as 2008 when I came to UNC is that you had examples of tech giants who started in and gained a foothold through distributing information or through aggregating information. And they kind of backed in to being media companies because they realized they needed content. The problem when you have a Facebook that backs into being a media company or a Google that backs into being a media company is that the founders do not have the same sort of sensibilities or the same sense of civic mission that's been cultivated over 240-some years.
But a lot of readers don't trust you. They don't trust you. They just don't trust you.
Well, for me, we should be concerned with this latest election when we see the number of fake news stories. Mm-hmm. We see the people grouping around, and when we see that more than 50% of people say they get their news from Facebook. I hope this election.
But that's because they don't trust you. And I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's because people look at the liberal media and they see you as only being one-sided.
Well, let me just say this. I'll let Sherry answer this, but I also hear the liberal media tends to come from places that like Fox News or like Breitbart, which actually stand for the exact opposite. So I think that what I think we're going through, as I said, newspapers are in a period of transition. All media is in a period of transition economically, socially, politically right now. But I think that these are all raising very interesting questions about democracy, about the role that newspapers have historically played. And I hope this prompts a real heartfelt debate on not just about trust, but about what is the role we want newspapers to play. I've said repeatedly to people, I'm not about preserving the print function of newspapers, but as a former journalist, I am very much in favor of preserving that function of setting the agenda for debate of public policy issues, helping communities grow, and giving that sense of geographic identity you need.
Sure.
So, you know, one of the things that people have said to me during and after the election is the sense that this is a new thing, that people gravitate toward a medium that validates their views already. That's actually not new. I mean, when you go back to when most cities had 2 to 3 newspapers, I remember in St. Louis, my grandmother, there was the Post and the Globe, and you knew your neighbor's political leanings by which paper they took. Mm-hmm. And she said, this paper lies and this paper tells the truth. And that was just what she felt because it validated her view. So it's actually a very old thing to gravitate toward news that is consonant with your views already. I think a lot of times there's so much news noise digitally now. I will have people who will write to me and say, you know, I read this story and I trust this more than you, and I got it off Facebook. And I said, well, send me the URL. Send me a copy. What was it? And it would have been a Wichita Eagle story or a Charlotte Observer story. People didn't even know what they were reading that they clicked on all the time. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is certainly – it is far easier to find something that agrees with your views right now, which is far more comfortable.
But when you're writing for the paper that lies mm-hmm. all the time mm-hmm. in the reader's mind – you don't think you're lying, do you?
No.
Are you deliberately making it up? Are you deliberately twisting it?
We're not making it up.
So why do they think you lie?
This is interesting, though. Penny talked about this idea of this fake news, which has become a real issue through this presidential election. The Washington Post had a really good story a day or two ago where they found two guys who – and I cannot remember the name of their website. It was something like Liberty News. And they actually talked about how they made up stories mm-hmm. and when their traffic would sort of slow down on the site – they would get up and look around and make up stories with is a very conservative bent to what they did. But they made a ton of money off of it yeah. from the page views. And they knew they were writing stories that weren't true. And I do, aside from people who say, we don't trust you, we don't believe, many times throughout the elections, we would get emails from people who said, you know, we're thankful you're here to write a fact-based story. And I know other people don't believe that, and they look for things that agree with them.
Historically, newspapers have been able – because it's a print medium and you can go back and reread something that you may not understand the first time you read it, they've been able to do more in-depth mm-hmm. coverage of various different things. And certainly, they're probably one of the few organizations, news organizations, that still does investigative reports at any right. depth. But television, according to the FCC – FCC found that only 10% of TV airtime under 2.5 minutes on an evening news show is typically devoted to discussing statewide and regional issues like health care and education. And in a big city like L.A., it's only 1.5 minutes.
Right.
You, Penny, talk about media in general. So why has television not taken up the slack? Why is it all flashing lights and fires, flashing blue lights and fires? Why?
Well, because there's a time constraint on the nightly news and what actually is.
It's a paper restraint too. You can't just print 100 pages a day. You have to sell those pages to print them. So there's a space limitation in newspapers.
Right, but there's more ability to cover that, even in reduced space, to cover some of these issues in depth. It's very hard to do a segment more than 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and it's very hard to bring the nuance of a story together in a way on broadcast. And as you mentioned, on radio, so many have even cut out local news. So you're very dependent on the ability of a newspaper, whether it's the Charlotte Observer or whether it's the Whiteville News Reporter, to give you the kind of perspective you need to make a decision.
Hmm. As I said earlier, Penny Abernathy and her organization up there at the UNC's School of Media and Journalism have put together the study of what's going right and what's going wrong with newspapers and what it means. And the study claims that the fates of newspapers and communities are inherently linked. If one fails, the other suffers. And it goes on to say that it matters who owns the local newspaper, because the decisions owners make affect the health and vitality of the community. And in a lot of these smaller communities, owners are coming in that have no newspaper experience whatsoever. We're going to talk about the impact of that and what that means when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar. New location open now at The View in downtown Charlotte near BB&T Ballpark. Full portfolio of wine and beer from all over the world, plus live music. Details at thescrewcrew.com. Some say President-elect Trump's rejection of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and threats to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord would hand global leadership over to China. So Diane Rehm and her guests We'll be talking about how China's global role could expand during a Trump presidency. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. We're talking about the future of newspapers, the future of journalism, and what all of this means to our form of government. If you'd like to join that conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Even before Obamacare became a campaign issue, the high price of prescription drugs was bringing some unwanted side effects.
We started getting to the point of, do we pay for this drug or do we pay our mortgage on our house?
I'm Kai Rizdal. This is Your Economy on Prescription Drugs. The story next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30, following All Things Considered, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the future of newspapers and the current state of newspapers and therefore journalism and therefore democracy. With Penny Abernathy, the Knight Chair in Journalism and Digital Media Economics at the UNC School of Media and Journalism, and Sherry Chisenhall, Managing Editor of the Charlotte Observer. Before we talk about ownership, let me tell you what's been coming in as we've been talking from people. Kirby emails, the New York Times and some other legacy publications said last week that they've seen major jumps in subscription since the elections. What does that say about our attitudes towards print? Maybe we'll get an answer later. John emails, I'm 34 and have never paid for news in my life until now. I just got a subscription to the New York Times. I'm worried about what a totally ad-supported news model might look like. What happens when clicks become most important? Usually you get what you pay for, and right now I'm willing to pay for my news. A little sidebar here. Is that part of the problem of monetizing the digital side, that to bring people to the digital side? And because it was moving that way, a lot of newspapers, including The Observer, made their digital news site free for a long time. And it still is free to a certain extent, unless you do too many clicks and then they want you to pay. Is that part of the problem? We set this paradigm up where, that's free. I don't need to pay for that.
Absolutely. There are a huge fraction of people who believe that news should be free and ought to be free. And I used to have this a back and forth when I was in Wichita and a smaller community where people would basically say to me, you have a First Amendment responsibility to give me free news, and it's outrageous that you make me pay for it.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? If you work for a business that gives its product away for free and can sustain that business model, great for you. And she said, well, I work for a company that makes airplanes. And it was big airplanes, you know, like the Boeing. I'll just say it's okay. Boeing. And I said, you know, when I travel on American Airlines, I love when I get to fly on your new planes versus the old planes.
Yeah.
If you would give about 5,000 of those to American Airlines, I could always fly on these better planes. And I said, you know, do you think you'd consider doing that? And she said, well, of course not. And I said, news is extremely expensive to cover. I wish we had far more reporters than we do, and we have to work hard to sustain the reporting force we have, but it's expensive. And it's why things like I know Patch is sort of getting another life to it, AOL's experiment, but it had 700 employees. They tried to cover news 7 days a week in micro communities and would find they just couldn't do it,
right?
That people couldn't take vacations, couldn't take time off. You can't do a 24/7 news operation with two people.
Dennis,
it's expensive.
Dennis emails, we've subscribed to the Printed Observer for over 9 years, and we've got to have it to start our day. And we see the shrinkage, and we understand the new advertising avenues businesses use, but we feel the Observer should explain their subscription rate better in their newspaper. What about that? Have you written an article about the hard times the paper industry is going through and why you have to charge what you charge?
I can't speak for the Observer. I've been here 4 months. I don't know what they've written, and I haven't looked that up, so I don't know. I am pretty confident the publisher or the editor, Rick Timms, have probably written about the shifting costs, but I can't say that for certain.
Okay. So the School of Media and Journalism at UNC has done this study that talks about the fates of newspapers and communities being linked. And you point out the recent emergence in the last decade of new media barons, is what you call them, new media barons. And they're not the people like Pulitzer or William Randolph Hearst of the early 20th century. These are private equity funds, hedge funds, investment partnerships who have swooped in, and including Warren Buffett, who have swooped in to buy newspapers all over the country, particularly smaller newspapers. If these are such unhealthy businesses scrambling to make a dollar, what with declining readership or revenues, why this interest from investors?
Well, I think it depends on the strategy you want to pursue. Sherry and I had both worked for Knight Ridder and also McClatchy. They were publicly owned chains, but had a commitment to buying a newspaper and holding on to it. That is a very different perspective from when you're thinking about private equity, when you think about hedge funds, and when you're thinking about other kind of investment partnerships.
Because those people were newspaper people. Those owners, McClatchy, Knight Ridder, the Catherine Graham at the Washington Post, these people, Mr. Salzberger at the New York Times, these are newspaper people, right?
Well, they were newspaper people. There's something else that's very different, too. The value of a newspaper when it's sold has dropped dramatically. So that means whereas in the past you needed, even if you owned a small newspaper, you typically paid 13 times earnings, mm-hmm. which meant you needed to hold the paper for some time. So when Sherry and I both ended up in Wichita as editors, we knew we were going to be there for a while. We made it a point to get to know the community. We made it a point to stay that to be a part of the civic structure and the civic institution of Wichita.
So when investor groups come in, they are not there for the long haul. They are there for as long as there's profit to be had, and when there's no profit to be had, or if they can turn it over in a year and a half, 2 years, they're out.
Right, exactly. So the hedge funds, private equity funds, have typically had a much shorter investment horizon, and it's all about investment, too.
So what does that mean for the community?
Well, it means several things. One, we've noticed that over the past decade, more than a third of 8,000 newspapers have changed ownership, and a good portion of those have changed two and three times. So when a private equity fund decides to sell you, they can sell you to another private company, which sells it, starts the cycle all over again. You've got kind of a revolving door ownership going through. And then if they just can't make a profit, they close it. You said 102 newspapers had closed. Actually, that's only dailies. If you count in weeklies that have closed in smaller communities, you're over 1,000
sure.
over the last decade.
And it's true. And if you look at what's driving this consolidation, and Mike, you touched on a point driving this earlier. The cost of digital news, the technology, is very expensive, and it's hard for a 3,000 circulation daily newspaper. You have vendors for your website. You don't create your own, here's how to log in and pay your bill. You contract with somebody else to do that. You contract with news services. You cannot drive great cost reductions in those services as a single small newspaper, and that's why you see so many family papers. Just a couple family papers were sold in Kansas just before I left. It's
right.
hard to do that, and they're not willing – they don't want to be there to make that choice of taking that from a 7-day to a 3-day.
You have an interactive map on your website, newspaperownership.com, mm-hmm. that shows newspapers around the country classified by color in terms of whether they are privately owned, publicly owned,
right.
stockholder owned, or part of an investment group. And most of them seem, at least just a cursory glance, to be owned by investor groups. And several of those papers are in this region. The Fayetteville Observer, the Courier Tribune in Asheboro, the Spartanburg Herald Journal, the Gaston Gazette, the Shelby Star, among others, are all
right.
owned by investment firms. What is the impact of that? Because your study says these conglomerate investors are not journalists. They lack that experience, and they lack a sense of civic mission traditionally embraced by publishers and editors. And it would seem to me in small towns particularly, that civic mission is paramount.
Well, it's absolutely true, and it gets back to what you said in the beginning. Often the newspaper is the only source. It's the sole source for all of that. The news that matters in that community. So if you've got a sense of a revolving editor, at least if the editor is there for a year or two, Maybe they make some roots in the community, begin to understand what makes the community tick, what's below the surface, and what the important issues are that need to be explored. But if the paper closes, then there's nothing covering the community.
And as I said before, you're involved in media, not just newspapers, but this may be a little bit out of your bailiwick. But this same trend, this same exact thing, this consolidation and coming in of investment groups and the cobbling together of properties who used to be independent and now are part of a family of groups. The same thing happened in broadcasting. I mean, you just look at radio. Most commercial radio stations are owned by four companies in the country.
Yes.
So, I mean, there was no gnashing of teeth over that. Why not?
Because they weren't the primary source of news in that community. You know,
but they're now
look
just
at
jukeboxes. At least there was
exactly. Yes, but newspapers are about news. Radio was about entertainment and other types of information as well as news.
And also, Penny will remember this. There was an era in the 90s where everybody said, well, the answer to this is going to be citizen journalists, that citizens will go sit. And it turned out no citizens wanted to go sit through a three-hour city council.
Charles emails, how does the citizen journalist fit into this business model?
Thank you, Charles. You know, it just became clear that no citizen wanted to go sit in a city council meeting for 3 hours and then go home and try to figure out what was a story.
You have to pay reporters to make them do that.
Yeah, it turns out that actually people do that if they're, you know, seriously paid to do it. And I think that is a movement that never really took foot. People didn't want to spend the time. They didn't want to be the source of news.
But do investors come in, these investment hedge funds come in with no experience, don't they know when they buy these businesses that part of what makes them important to a community's life is the civic engagement and the sense of mission that these don't they know that and encourage that in their employees, or is it only about profit?
Well, Penny, go ahead, Penny.
I was going to say, let me go back and mention something. You were talking about the media barons of the past. So you think of a Pulitzer, you think of a Scripps, you think about where they came from, what their communities were, what they considered their founding newspapers. Sherry and I worked for Knight Ritter, and Knight Ritter had considered the Miami Herald one of its flagship newspapers. So there was a sense of community there, even though you could own 32 papers as Knight Ritter did. Each one had a sense of a tie to a community, whether it was Grand Forks, whether it was Wichita, whether it was Miami Herald. With these investment companies, for instance, New Media Gatehouse owns more than 600 publications. It amounts to less than 1% of the revenue that comes into Fortress Investment Holdings, which manages $70 billion in revenue and investment. So how important are the civic attachments of the 600 papers that produce $600 million to a $70 billion enterprise?
So one of the results of newspapers being owned by investment firms, especially in hard times where profits are more challenging, is that there is less emphasis, you say, on expensive public service and accountability journalism, and the temptation to have reporters cover stories that will trend or engage readers online. They are trivializing the role of newspapers and deciding not to spend precious resources on what you call complex, time-consuming reporting that may or may not bear fruit. That's what's happening?
Well, first off, they don't have the staff. The staff has been cut usually for the newsroom. And as Sherry's mentioned, that kind of public service journalism is very expensive. Sherry, do you want to add to that?
Well, two things that I'd say. And one is it depends on the ownership and the leadership of the paper and how they define their mission. Several years ago, there was a paper that was a finalist for a Pulitzer in local news reporting, and they had a two-person staff. But they decided that's what they were going to do. And the other caution I would throw out is that the idea of having a single local private owner is not always a good thing either. You know, there's certainly problems with an owner who is unreachable and sees the newspaper, both digital and print, as simply a source of revenue. But there's many stories you can find of a single private person who bought a newspaper and used it with no check to their own devices in that community, as large as San Diego.
So when these newspapers are shutting down or becoming weeklies in these smaller newspaper markets. Is this a function of small market newspaper owners simply not being able to make a go of it in today's world? Or is it a function of these conglomerates coming in, buying them, realizing there's no profit, not being able to sell it, so they just shut it down and take their losses?
It's both. The ad revenue for print ad revenue started declining dramatically. It peaked in 2000. By 2010, it was below 2000 levels. It had fallen back down to, below 1950 levels. So when we first started measuring, so there's a real revenue problem, and which puts a real emphasis on cost containment if you're going to buy a newspaper.
And when that happens, your study reports that news deserts are created, and you worry about the long-term political, social, and economic consequences. But won't something come in and fill the vacuum?
Well, that's what we're trying to prove right now, and we've been very successful, as have a number of people, of pointing out that newspapers need to think about revenue, as Sherry said, in multiple ways, and how they actually accommodate the businesses that are in their area.
You mentioned that we need to talk about solutions in the next 2 minutes before we run out of time here, but you mentioned that the government could change policies that have heretofore focused on keeping competitive newspapers just that. You've also worked to prevent owners, the government has worked to prevent owners of traditional news organizations, papers, TV, radio, from getting together with cross-media ownership. You're saying that should change?
I'm saying that those are 20th century regulations, and we need to go back and look at how relevant they are now and if there's something better that can be done.
Ultimately, I would say also you have to think about, does a community, its readers, its potential readers, and its businesses support a local newspaper? And if you are a community that has some business, I mean, I realize some of these communities are very small, but do your readers subscribe to and pay for the newspaper and help support it? And do your businesses support that business?
And you guys suggest that news organizations see each other as collaborators rather than competitors. This is already happening.
Mm-hmm.
You're collaborating with a television station. Oh, your reporters are on this station all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the transition, right?
Absolutely.
The New York Times ran an article that said September 7th, 2016, may well have been the day when newspapers died. That's the day when the Newspaper Association of America, the trade group that has represented the business since 1887, dropped the word newspaper from their name, becoming the News Media Alliance. Not only because of declining readership on paper, but because large news organizations like The Washington Post and The New York Times and Dow Jones can no longer be contained by the word newspaper. They are so much more, as is The Observer.
Exactly.
Is that good news, very quickly?
It is. I think the diversification of sources and news platforms is a good thing.
Penny Abernathy is the Knight Chair in Journalism and Digital Media Economics at the UNC School of Media and Journalism. She joined us from WUNC in Chapel Hill. And Sherry Chisenhall is Managing Editor of the Charlotte Observer in our studio here. Thank you both for the hour. And good luck.